Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling, producer of the show, and I'm pleased to welcome you to Clinical Air, episode number 7, where we talk about open innovation and engaging patients by sharing electronic clinical data. Our host is Craig Lipset, head of clinical innovation R&D at Pfizer, and our guests today include Adam Dole, Presidential Innovation Fellow at the White House, and we have Thomas Krohn, Business Lead for the Lilly Clinical Open Innovation Team, and Jennifer Wolf, who is Director of Clinical Innovation at Pfizer. So welcome, everyone, and welcome, Craig. So, Craig, do you want to take over?
Thank you, Val, and it is it's great to have the chance to record episode lucky number 7. Val was just sharing before the show started that you are not alone as a listener. Apparently, there are about 3,000 listeners so far to the 6 shows previously. Our top listened show was the one recently recorded on mobile. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to those, go back, take a look at some of the growing archive of content that we've started to accumulate. But pretty exciting that there are that many folks out there that have been listening and hopefully will continue to. We're going to carry on the theme that we've been following with some really interesting guests on the show. The first person I'm excited to introduce is Tom Krohn from Eli Lilly. Tom is a champion of open innovation and helps to lead a clinical open innovation group inside of Lilly. Tom, welcome aboard.
Thanks much, Craig.
So, Tom, I run a team that's focused on innovation in clinical trials, but you've got this open word slipped into your title. Can you help folks to understand what open innovation means to you and how you apply that spirit within your work at Lilly?
Certainly. Thank you. So innovation is, I think of it as a significant improvement, dramatic improvement over the way things are done today. And there's certainly lots of innovation in different industries, and especially in the pharmaceutical industry. We are an innovation industry of bringing new medicines to patients. And what I watched, and I've been in pharma for 12 years and outside 15 before that, and when I watch pharma and its interactions around innovation, it typically is in a closed mindset, which is to say it's largely under a construct of business deals, of secrecy, of competitive intelligence. And yet when you really look at the ecosystem that we exist in, it's clear we don't do the research directly. We design and execute, but it happens in the hospitals. And the model that we have going right now has been struggling from a performance, from a cost and time, et cetera. And so we started some work really around design 5, 6, 7 years ago, focusing on improving design, getting it right the first time. But as we did that, if it's the same players and the same constructs, what we've seen is that the decisions, no matter how good the input and such is largely the same. Performance hasn't moved much. And so we started exploring alternative models for engaging others in innovation while not putting at risk, if you will, our core business model. And we know we're a patent business model. And so our open emphasis is how do we reach and really tangibly engage people outside of the system that normally are not there. And so a good example of this is it is very rare in my experience for pharma to directly engage patients in our clinical study design. And yet when we launch these large $10, $100 million studies, it's often happens that the feedback we get from the marketplace, primarily from patients and their physicians, is that they say this doesn't fit the norms of the practice, especially on global studies, or this doesn't align relevant to other options, and I'm not going to enroll. And so we have these very long, extended processes, in this case clinical trials. And so we looked at different ways, what part of our business model really is not secretive, really is not something that needs to remain closed. And in fact, when you get to late stage, phase stage 2, 3, the designs, the what are we going after, the indications, the approaches, that is not secret because we communicate it, it's in the registries and such, and yet the model is still primary closed. And so we are looking, I put an emphasis on open. I'm an innovation person in general, but I think a lever that we can bring into the industry is bringing other players to the table. They have strong motivations and strong willingness to engage. And how do we help them engage and advance our research pipeline and do it in a way that is complementary to our business model, not undermining it, but actually accelerates and makes it more effective? So that's my emphasis on open innovation.
So Tom, does everything have to be entirely open and porous? So, for instance, we have these new collaboration vehicles like Transcelerate, where companies are coming together and sharing in unprecedented ways, but there are still boundaries around it. It's not completely porous, but it is more open than just an insular single company working in an ivory tower. Does that count, or is open a continuum?
It's definitely a continuum, and it needs to be done in the context of the business strategy, its goals, and that actually is unique from company to company. And so what I see is a default to closed. And so the emphasis on open is actually to push the systems a bit to explore what part really should we be collaborative. And I think Transcelerate's a great example. I think there are other examples. I think what we're seeing emerging in the marketplace around improved data sharing, beyond the operational nature of Transcelerate, I think those are good. We see lots of flavors of open innovation. What's clear is that it plays along a core business. And so there's parts of the business model that are not fully open. And certainly when it comes to patient privacy and all the rights and the appropriateness of that while conducting good science, there are still pieces that are managed, closed, et cetera. But I think it's worth asking the questions, and we believe there's a strong business case to look at parts of the model that should be opened up or should be done in collaboration.
You mentioned data sharing, and 2013 was certainly a year marked by significant movement among the pharmaceutical industry, opening up patient-level data for research use, for other uses. Starting with the likes of Glaxo and Roche and other companies stepping forward. Most recently, J&J announcing their collaboration with Yale and the Yoda Project to make available patient-level data. How do you see, does that fit within your lens of open innovation, or is that really just a transparency play?
So it's certainly a transparency play, and I do think it fits within the open innovation lens as well. The reason is if it's – so you could argue that open equals transparency in some respects. But when open is applied for creating something new that impacts a business or impacts a process or execution, then it can become innovative. And so in the case of data sharing, it's quite possible in this business of life science that in the process of sharing and doing good additional analytics on data, that we will find things that we didn't see before. And if that's applied to a robust validation of those insights, then you have an innovation piece that happened because you were open. And so I think it does fit. I think at this stage, all of the industry is appropriately trying to determine how best to do this, and I'm excited to see the different groups and organizations doing that in the marketplace.
I agree with you. I think that transparency can be so much more than just a box people are checking or a commitment that they're making. It can really create some great opportunities to when you're exposing new data to enable some exciting new research and exciting new partnerships in unlikely places. And some of that actually is a great segue to the next two folks I would love to introduce and to bring into the conversation, Adam Dole, a White House Innovation Fellow, and Jennifer Wolf, a Director of Clinical Innovation at a company in New York called Pfizer. Welcome, Adam and Jennifer.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you, Craig. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Adam, we have not had somebody with a title like yours on this show before. What is a White House Innovation Fellow? Can you share with folks what a day in the life looks like for the work you're doing?
Absolutely. So the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program was started a couple of years ago through President Obama and U.S. Chief Technology Officer Todd Park as a way to bring private sector individuals into government, onto high-profile government projects for very specific length of time, generally between 6 and 12 months, to provide and inject a little bit more entrepreneurial thinking and process to help scale the different agency projects to get to the next level. The agency that I'm working with is the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and I'm working primarily on the Blue Button Project, which is a public-private initiative that aims to empower all people in our country with access to their electronic medical records in both a human and machine-readable format. And I think there's a big distinction that I want to tease out with human and machine-readable format, because we really want to empower people to share their records across the ecosystem. As we all know right now, the healthcare system is siloed into a lot of proprietary ways that prevent individuals from sharing those records. So Blue Button is all about getting that data in a structured, standardized format so that it can be shared with trusted sources that an individual has an interest in sharing with, whether it's other providers, other caregivers, or third-party apps, and a lot of services that can actually make that data more actionable. So a lot of my time is actually spent thinking about new data sources that we can pull into the Blue Button ecosystem. We know that the clinical records that exist inside traditional EMRs are really just one slice of an individual's health record. And so we are starting to expand the scope of Blue Button, and we actually just made an announcement a few weeks ago that a lot of the major retail pharmacy chains are now on board with Blue Button, and we'll be making their data available, like I said, in a machine-readable format that can then be moved and ingested by third-party apps, which we're really excited about. And I think it's also worth probably noting that Blue Button was started a number of years ago inside the VA as a side project because they recognized that a lot of vets were going outside the VA health system for care. And what a great idea to be able to empower your patient population with a record so that they could freely take them outside the health system. And that is, looking back on it, such a progressive approach. Speaking of open innovation, not thinking about those records as a siloed piece of intellectual property by the health system, but rather the records of the patient that they should have access to be able to share with whoever they want. And so we've really leveraged that model and have scaled it now to become not just a federal initiative, but very much a private sector initiative, which includes hospitals, pharmacies, labs, a lot of health insurance companies. And we're really excited that clinical trial data is now part of that set as well, and looking forward to working more on getting that data to be inside people's health records in a meaningful and actionable way.
Oh, Craig, are you still on the line?
Sorry, I'm talking on mute. Sorry about that, Val.
Oh,
Adam,
that's
you don't
okay.
Sound like, you don't sound
good,
like a typical. You don't sound like a typical inside the Beltway government employee. Where did you come from? How did you land here?
So you're absolutely right. I've not really had any previous roles inside of government. I have been like this before, and I come from the private sector. Previous to becoming a fellow, I was an entrepreneur in residence at the Mayo Clinic. I was based in Silicon Valley and was really responsible for helping to drum up new startups and create new organizations that could leverage a lot of the expertise of Mayo Clinic. And we actually were able to spin out a new startup about a year ago now, which is off and running in Palo Alto, a digital health company called Better. And prior to that, I was not in the healthcare industry at all. I was actually a design strategist for a few different design strategy firms that help clients figure out where they should be going next and help them design products and services that meet their customers' unmet needs and really help chart kind of a roadmap and a pathway for those organizations' opportunities for growth.
That's great. That's great. Now Jennifer, you've become pretty well versed in the language of the blue button for a clinical trial focused pharma person. How talk to us about the project that you've got right now. Why did you spearhead this? Why did you take this on within Pfizer? What are you trying to achieve?
Sure. So over the last couple of years, we've been looking at how we can give patients who participate in our clinical trials back their data electronically. So for anyone who participates in trials today, if you've been through a trial, at the end of the trial when it wraps up, you can go in and get your data and you get a big stack of paper and it's printed out and it's you can get it, you can access it, but it's really not very usable in terms of especially in a new model of medical home. And as Adam mentioned, being able to really access your data and make it actionable and make it shareable with others. So over the several years, looking at various ways of how could we do this in this future world, would there be a way that we could actually easily provide patients who participate in trials back their data? And as being involved in various projects and meaningful use and other things, and being aware of the great work that the White House and Adam's team and HHS was doing in developing Blue Button and seeing the VA use it as a way to share back their data, it seemed like this was an excellent opportunity to leverage a standard platform and finally sort of the easy solution that we were looking for to be able to provide patients back with their data. So sitting within Pfizer and working across various teams and sharing this opportunity, we got great support from all of our leaders and to be able to move forward to pilot this project to be the first for Pfizer to be the first in the pharmaceutical industry to test out using Blue Button in a slightly different application, but using it to give patients back their data who participate in our trials.
Craig, I think we have you on mute again.
So, Jen, what is that? Sorry, what is different phone today? Sorry. Talk to me about what that looks like. What is it that you're building or enabling? What's the scope of this initial dance with the Blue Button?
So Pfizer's inaugural Blue Button project is a project. So what it looks like is patients who are – we're testing the feasibility of it initially. So can we actually provide patients back with a set of their data in who've completed our trials and learning how patients want to use this data. So what this actually looks like in a implementation real-world standpoint is that we have patients who have completed one of our trials, and it's and they are – at the end of the trial, they are – invited to join the Pfizer Link online community. So this is an existing community that Pfizer has. It's an online community where patients who, at the end of a trial, are invited to enroll in this online community and stay aware of updates on the trial, get information from the trial. So we've leveraged this. The patient is invited to join Pfizer Link. And once they enroll in Pfizer Link, they will see the Blue Button. So similar to the VA and everyone else has used the standard Blue Button, the patient will log in, they'll see the Blue Button, and they have the opportunity at that point to submit, hit the Blue Button, and to download a set of their data that was collected during the trial. So we know that during the course of a trial, thousands and thousands of pieces of data are collected on a patient. They participate in various labs and all sorts of different diagnostics. And we felt that it was very important for patients to have this information so they can use it, share it with their healthcare providers, have it considered as part of their outcome and their treatment. So the patient who enrolls in Blue Button will click on the Blue Button, and they'll have the option to download their data either as a PDF or as an XML file. So with the Blue Button standard, the XML file allows it to be extensible and used across various browsers and in various ways. The PDF we wanted to provide so that it was also something very user-friendly. If someone wanted to print it out or wanted to send it to someone, to a caregiver, to whomever, that was also another easy way for them to do that. So the patient will, like I said, once they hit the Blue Button, they'll download it. They can choose which format they want to receive it. And then it's up to them how they want to use that data. So as Adam mentioned, you know, the goal of Blue Button is really the opening up of data and making data, an individual's own health data, accessible to them, allowing them to share it. So whether it's data from their healthcare provider, data now from a pharmacy or from the retail clinics, all the various partners who are using Blue Button, we wanted to participate so that patients who participate in Pfizer trials have that ability to also access their data that was collected during the trial and use it in whatever, however they wanted to use it.
You know, it's funny, in the course of this project there, it's been a great opportunity to expose a lot of people in the life sciences to the Blue Button, a lot of folks that really didn't appreciate what was going on in this parallel world in healthcare. And it, on a few occasions, I've had some folks inside of Pfizer come to me and say, you know, Craig, calling this a Blue Button, what a great idea to take advantage of Pfizer's blue logo and to construct, you know, a brand of a button around that. Wow, that was great.
And Craig, yes, in your discussions with our senior leaders to get their support and buy-in, you know, however we have to position it of, yes, it was the Blue Button just for Pfizer. It got them on board. That was fantastic. But I will definitely say there's been a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement for this project, a lot of support internally. And it's great to see our senior leaders and, as you mentioned, folks all across Pfizer, as this was definitely a very new project, a new initiative, since no one in the pharmaceutical industry has, in life sciences, has done this yet, that getting people from regulatory and compliance to legal to our business technology partners to outside folks to the study teams on board, educated about this, and their support and enthusiasm for this. This is something that we're collecting this data from patients. It's their data. They should have it. We're in this environment now of meaningful use, of personal health records, of having access to data, electronic health data across various vehicles. So why not clinical trials, patients participating in our trials, to empower them and give them this information? So for me, it's very exciting to see all the support from so many folks across Pfizer of how great this effort is. This is something we should be doing, a direction we should be moving in, and empowering patients by giving them their own health data electronically.
Now, Tom, you happen to be one of those folks, though, in the life sciences space that does speak Blue Button. You've been close to this world around data for a while. Presumably, Lilly will not force you to rebrand it as a Red Button to comply with your logo and color scheme. What opportunities are you looking at around this space, jumping on with open data and patient access to their data? What are you excited about with things like the Blue Button?
Yeah, so compliments to you guys for leading on the patient access to their data. I think the nature of Blue Button is power to the patient and enabling them to understand, engage in their health, and leverage really the innovation in the marketplace, as Adam was sharing. So if we can imagine a world where the Blue Button, this standard HL7 XML document, is ubiquitous in the U.S. and hopefully beyond at some point, That is a nice structured document, which in its state, a snapshot, represents a pretty good insight to the patients, especially when you bring different varying groups of CCDAs and they get combined with their pharmacy records and such. So what's very intriguing to me on that is one of the fundamental challenges that we have in clinical trials and development timelines is patients finding or studies or studies finding patients. And so let's take oncology. You know, it's estimated that roughly 5% of U.S. population participates in cancer studies. And yet, you go to any major institution or academic or such, they'll be pretty quick to say the best place for a patient to be in oncology with a cancer is in a study, because they will be put into the best standard of care and as well as the potential of a new agent with promise. And yet such a small percentage participate. And I think part of that is because we have a lot of friction between what the design and what pharma or the sponsor of the study communicates in the public domain and what the patient is trying to determine. So in terms of a potential study. Clinicaltrials.gov is 98 million page views per month. And if you break that down to their statistics, about half or 50 million page views per month come from patients looking for studies. And yet the eligibility, so would I be a candidate for that study, varies by study. It is not machine readable. It's a free text blob that is very difficult to interpret. And you probably need to have a pretty good scientific lab, health, life science, clinician point of view to even understand it. So we have a project in partnership with Novartis and Pfizer that we're very excited about, and it's really leveraging work we've started over the past couple of years around open data and through an open API or application programming interface. That's a web-style system-to-system way to connect to information and let it flow. We've put Creative Commons copyleft license on that, so there's a nice open legal framework as well. And what we're bringing to the table is, and it's really a challenge to the sponsors of the studies, is to put a clearly machine-readable essence of the eligibility criteria into this API. And so we're in the process of testing that. We call that a target profile. And basically, it is the high-level summary of the eligibility, which if you brought your blue button, and let's come back to the blue button, imagine patients, communities, hospital institutions, et cetera, being able to quickly transform or have that access in CCDA format, the blue button format, and then be able to quickly see if there is a potential study. My simple phrase of this is matching patients to studies. And I think this is a very exciting, especially for patients. And for those of us who have worked closely with patients in studies, it can be really hard to find a study. And on a personal side, I lost my brother-in-law last year to esophageal cancer, and it was extremely difficult to find a potential study for him. And unfortunately, it became too late. And so one of the things we want to do is make that easy and clear to patients so that they can bring their data and they can find the study that works for them. And we're doing this in a non-competitive manner. So if they match to a Pfizer study and not a Lilly study, that is fine. Because from a patient point of view, it doesn't matter who the sponsor is. The question is the right study for them. And so I'm really excited to open up and clarify and make it easy for patients to be able to connect to our clinical studies and through this match effort and leveraging the blue button and improving what we put into public domain through the API we've built here at Lilly. So I'm excited.
And Tom, I know there are a lot of people that are excited about this and want to understand about getting involved, whether there are other pharma companies or recruitment companies. Do you have a website posted where you're sharing updates?
We do. It's Patients to Trials Consortium. If you look that up, it's a Google site. The URL is a little tricky, but certainly if you look that up, We also have blogged about this on our lilycoi.com blog with a link out to that site. And so the information is there. I can tell you right now this is new ground. This is new ground for creating these target profiles. This is new ground for matching to CCDA XML documents, and that has got momentum, but yet is not yet a market norm. But kudos to Adam and his team for the traction they're getting. So we are in proof of concept mode through April, and then we'll be sharing the results of that proof of concept and the plans on the other side of April based on our learnings in these first 4 months of how we want to make this a broader play where other sponsors and certainly the marketplace, because the API will be open and we want to enable patients and their communities to be able to connect to research. So patients to trials consortium, and you'll find it.
That's fabulous. Now, Adam, let's turn it back over to you. You've got the life sciences folks have found their way to the blue button. What would be your call to action? What's your message to this community about getting involved in this exciting world?
Well, we're thrilled that that Blue Button has found its way into the life sciences, especially around such a meaningful need around patient matching and really opening up new data sets for patients. It's really powerful stuff. The big call to action that I would have is going back to the folks that actually collect the data, the clinical data on patients. So whether those are providers or hospitals that actually have patient records, making sure that those are, in fact, the CCDA format, which is XML machine-readable file that can go in to these third-party apps. And, the clinical trial API is just one of many examples of how getting this data to flow can actually save lives. But if the hospital is taking proprietary approaches to creating portals that don't allow patients to move their data out of that system, then we're locked and there isn't a whole lot of data flowing. So that would be the biggest call to action, is to get more and more adoption of the CCDA format, using different ways to transport the data, whether that's the direct protocol, which acts a lot like email, or thinking about APIs as an emerging way to move data within healthcare. We'd like to see more adoption of both of those things so that more data can flow to things like the patient matching API and those sorts of apps.
You know, I got to say, Adam, I think whether it's through policy or other levels of support, it's essential for this industry to continue to support that work that you're describing, that when patients have access and control over their electronic health data, they're willing to share that data to support research. And we need to support that ecosystem. It is an exciting and critical part of the future of how we'll develop the next generation of medicines. The old models aren't sustainable. This, I think, can be a critical part of that new future. And so I thank you for the work you've been doing to drive that adoption and that empowerment. And I think Jennifer and Tom, the work that you guys are doing to start to introduce these tools as leaders in the industry, hopefully will just spur a windfall of other activity across the community. So thank you all for joining us in this conversation today.
Thank you very much,
Greg,
for hosting.
Thanks, Greg.
Yes, thanks, Craig. Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Jen. Thanks, everyone.